everybody. How are you? This is In the Blue Corner, Blue Moon Boxing, Blue Moon Entertainment. I'm Jaime Mota, and like always, here with me is Doug Fisher, editor-in-chief of The Ring Magazine. How you doing, Doug?
Yeah, what's going on, Jaime?
Good, good, good. We awake?
I am. I've had one cup of coffee. I will have many more.
Okay.
I will have many more. But I'm hyped to be here with this young man, though.
Oh, yes. We have a great guest, guys. He is the number one contender, WBO featherweight division, 24-1, 14 KOs from Glendora, California. Joette Gonzalez is here, guys. Woo!
Thank you, guys. Welcome, Joette. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Good to see you.
Are you a morning person?
Yeah, I'm a morning person. I have to get up early to work out. You know,
that's right.
My running, my strength and conditioning. So, yeah, I have to be
a morning
person.
Yeah, but the thing is... Correct me if I'm wrong. Boxers will get up at like 4 or 5 a.m. to do their road work. Then they go back home and go back to sleep. And then they go to the gym, right?
Yeah.
Is that how you do it?
That's how it is, you know.
Well, yeah. See, the thing is, you can get up in the morning.
You can be a boxer and not be a morning person. You can just be like, okay, true. I'm going to slog through this road work, and then I can't wait to get back and get some shut-eye.
See, I do just about the same thing. I wake up. But then I go back to bed no matter what, and I don't go running.
Man. I do that. I get up early. I drive the kids to school. Yeah. I come back. I catch an early nap. Yeah.
I try to hit the gym every once in a while. I know. So, Joette, number one contender, WBO, 126 pounds, and you've got a big fight coming up. Emmanuel El Vaquero Navarrete. I mean, you know, this is your second title fight.
And by the way, no easy march for Joette.
Okay? God,
first crack was at the vacant WBO title, and that was against an Olympic medalist, Shakur Stevenson, who was like the ultimate stylist, right? Real athletic, stick and move guy. And now you're in against a quintessential aggressive Mexican fighter, but like a tried and true volume puncher, who's tricky, who's awkward.
Yeah,
it's like, how do you even prepare for this guy?
No, there's no way to prepare for him. You know, he's unique in his own way. And he knows what he's doing in there. And he's a big puncher. And it's going to be a great fight.
Oh, two styles that are completely opposite, like Doug mentioned. Do you take that into consideration as to how you prepare, what you want to do? Or is it, let me do me?
No, you have to prepare yourself, you know, mentally and physically for the styles. Obviously, you know, the first time we had a slick boxer, Olympic boxer, and this time we have, you know, a punching machine that will knock you out within any round. So you have to prepare mentally and physically. And, you know, it's a hard style to crack, but we had a great camp and we're ready for October 15th.
Hey, Joette, correct me if I'm wrong. It seems to me, as formidable as Navarrete is, his aggression and that volume punching, that's a style that works better for your style. Like, you prefer guys to fight you as opposed to guys who are punching on the fly, so to speak.
Yeah. I prefer, you know, action fighters, you know, guys that are coming at me or just even throwing punches, willing to exchange and just willing to give, you know, the people a great fight. That's what I like to do, like give people great fights. And Navarrete is perfect for that style. He fits perfectly.
Who have you fought that you could compare to Navarrete's style, if any?
Yeah, good question.
No one. Just the aggression, maybe some volume punching, but like his style himself, no, like he's different. He's unique and
he's quirky.
He's not like 126 pound
Antonio Margarito. It's not just like
forward march,
you know, 150 punches a round. He's like bouncing on his, and he's kind of going in and out. And he moves, and then suddenly he moves in.
Yeah.
And he's got these like sneaky uppercuts. Now, I know you've been watching, you've watched a lot of his fights. I know this. You know, you've had your eye on him since the Miguel Mariaga fight. But the HBO crew, they love that, like, that sneaky left uppercut, that lead left uppercut, which he dropped Ruben Villa, the fourth. He dropped Christopher Diaz with it a couple times. Is that something that you're looking out for, and that in your mind you're like, ain't no way I'm getting caught with that punch?
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, it's an awkward punch. He throws it from a different angle, an angle that you think it's not going to reach you, but it eventually does. And basically for this fight, I prepared, like, for the unexpected, because that's how you have to prepare for him.
What do you do for an unexpected? I mean, what I mean, right, like, it's like something that you don't know.
Like dozen sparring partners.
So what do you do?
I just tell my brothers, because they're the ones helping me for the sparring. I say, yo, just throw any crazy punch you can think of from any angle. Like
when we were kids and you guys used to come at me like, you know, two and three on one.
Yeah, just anything you don't think a normal boxer would do. Just throw it at me and let's go from there.
Now, what do you do? Okay, we've talked a lot about Navarrete, but what does he have to worry about when he faces you? What does Joette Gonzalez do well? And what's going to carry you forward, you know, in this fight? What will get you that title?
I think, you know, I'm a natural featherweight. I think his opponents before him, like, they're smaller. They're smaller. They're shorter. You know, obviously they don't have the arm length, the arm reach.
That's
and
true.
I do. I have the height. I have the arm reach. I think I'm quicker than them. And then obviously, you know, I was an amateur stand-up myself. So I can box. I don't think people have seen that before, because obviously the opponents I've had to move forward. But Navarrete coming at me, you know, I can move around, and I feel like I could box better than them.
Joette had 101 amateur bouts, and he was a U.S. national champion. For those who aren't familiar with you, how would you describe your style, your boxing style?
I think I'm a boxer puncher. I think people just see me as an aggressive guy coming forward, throw punches as well. But I can box too. And with Navarrete, I feel like his style will, like, it'll make the people like see that side of me. And
styles make fights.
Yeah, styles make fights.
I categorize Joette as a technician.
I would tend to agree.
Technique is all. It's textbook. It's leverage on every punch. He is aggressive, but he's real methodical and systematic in the way he walks his opponents down. And I thought you were perfect. Like it was the most mature performance of your career. Your last fight against Mariaga, you know, a seasoned veteran, and you know, it was that the kind of performance that you need going into your second shot at a world title?
Yeah, definitely. Because you know, Mariaga only fought, you know, top guys, and his only losses before me were to world champions. I was the first guy that he lost to that wasn't a world champ. You know, he lost to Lomachenko, he lost to Oscar Valdez, Nicholas Walters, all world title fights.
Yeah, and he was game, and he was competitive in those fights.
So he was a tough guy, tough veteran, experienced guy. But you know, I came in with the mentality that I had to win that fight. I couldn't take back-to-back losses, and that's exactly what I did. I came out with the victory.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
He surprised his manager by taking that fight.
Yeah.
Frank Espinosa was like, okay, he offers the fight, and he's like, are you sure? You just say yes, let's go for it.
Yeah,
and he's like,
instantly, like,
dude.
He offered me the fight, and I instantly just like, yes, let's go. And he's like, well, are you sure? Are you serious? I'm like, yeah. And he told me, give me 24 hours to think about it. So I gave him
hours. You convinced him?
Yeah, I convinced him pretty much. I called him the next day, and I told him, hey, listen, are we going to do this or what? And he's like, you really want to fight? I'm like, yeah, like there's no fights right now. We're in a pandemic. Everybody wants tune-ups, and there's no opportunities. You know, the people were barely starting to open up the boxing fights, and I was like, I need this fight.
And you weren't worried kind of going into the Lions Den, because that was the bubble at the MGM Grand. It was top rank. Mm-hmm. Mariaga was the top ranked fighter. Yeah. So you're going in, you know, you're on enemy territory, so to speak.
Basically, and I think top rank themselves, they probably, you know, the mental side of the boxing game, they probably thought I wasn't going to take the fight. But, I mean, I'm here to fight. Like I said before, I'm here to fight whoever, whenever, your backyard, my backyard. Just here to give a great show.
Now, the mental aspect going into this fight, how does it help that, you know, you've been in a title fight before? Unfortunately, you know, you didn't come out with your hand raised. Mm-hmm. But after that being such a letdown for you, because you've spoken about that, how did that help going into this fight, you know, with Navarrete?
I just think, for me, I mean, I knew who I was. I knew, you know, coming from that loss, you know, the backstory and everything, the drama. I feel like a lot of fighters in my position, they would have quit by now. You know, you have fighters take one loss and it's just a normal fight and they're gone. And me, I took the loss. You know, I took a week off from the gym and literally the next week I was back in there training, preparing for a fight, but then the pandemic happened and got canceled. But I was mentally ready. I knew, you know, I was going to go back into enemy territory again, but I prepared myself well mentally and physically. I trained hard and I came out with the victory.
Now, you just mentioned the backstory with that one loss against Shakur Stevenson. Talk to us a little bit about that. You know, what was going on between you and Shakur, and what made that fight even that more important for you?
Honestly, nothing was going on from my side. I don't know why he was just upset. I mean, I was ranked in the WBO. He was ranked. I don't know. To be honest with you, no clue. He was the one, like I said, it was Top Ranks promotion.
Right.
They promoted the fight.
And they played that up. They played up this like soap opera sort of thing.
So I'm very, you know, my life's very personal to me. Mm. I'm not out there, you know, putting stuff, mentioning stuff. So if whatever info they got was from that side, it wasn't part of me. So that's on them. I just came up, played the role, and came to fight.
Do you feel it threw you off, though, just kind of emotionally, that being the storyline going into the fight, the whole thing with your sister and Shakur and that relationship and everything that was put out there? Like, did that take away from your focus
a little bit
before and during the fight?
It was just annoying. Like it's a fight. We're here to fight, and you guys are out here complaining and making a story out of, you know, something just because anger. I'm not sure, you know. But it was just annoying from my part. You know, it is what it is. I take my losses how I take my wins, and just moving forward.
Well, we're gonna come back, talk a little bit more about, you know, that fight, your first championship fight, and other things here with Joette Gonzalez in the blue corner.
Have you ever met a single person in your life that enjoys paying taxes? No one does. If you can't sleep at night because you have a huge problem with the IRS, I've got some free advice for you. This service is strictly limited to individuals that owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes. And if you qualify, we can guarantee that you won't be writing a big fat check to the IRS, or our services cost you nothing. The first 100 people that call today will get a free tax consultation worth $500. Stop worrying about your IRS problem. We can help you, we promise. Call the tax doctor right now, I mean right now, to learn more.
800-741-8791. 800-741-8791. 800-741-8791. That's 800-741-8791.
Now, let's get back to Joette Gonzalez. And we were talking about, you know, your first title fight against Shakur Stevenson. Even though it was your first title fight, a little bit of a grudge match. You guys knew each other from the amateurs. There was a little bit of drama that was going on at the time. How much did everything going into that fight play into the way you fought Shakur?
I mean, it did make a difference. Like you said, it was a lot of drama, a lot of things going on. But basically, you know, he fought smarter that day. You know, he was the one. Like I said, I'm very private. I don't really talk. It's hard for me to just talk. And he was, you know, talking all the smack and this and that. So I was expecting, you know, him to come at me. He was gonna say, he was gonna, you know, F me up and
but
knock
you did
me
you
out.
Did some trash talking as well leading up to the fight, because you said that
not verbally, you know, like just fire back on social media little things, but maybe once or twice. But besides that, nothing. It was all
it seems
him.
To me it wasn't personal with you.
It wasn't personal for me, you know. He was more I don't know why he was angry, to be honest with you. You know, it was just a fight. And
seems to me, here's my take.
Okay
Shakur is a young guy, you know, obviously a bright talent. I'm not going to say he's not a bright personality, but the style of boxing that Shakur employs, and they'd seen that a few times on their broadcasts, not the most crowd pleasing, right? So they're like, exactly. Okay, yeah. How do we hype this up? Okay, because Joette Gonzalez, you know, he's known by hardcore boxing fans, also a quiet guy, first time on ESPN. It's like, how do we promote this fight? How do we hype this fight?
Okay.
Let's make it like, you know, Family Feud. Let's make it a grudge match. Let's make it personal. Let's say it's personal. And let's play that up. And to be quite honest, I thought they overdid it. Hmm. I thought they did it to an extent where they weren't talking about the fight
anyway.
Or the style matchup. But I do think that it was a distraction.
How much?
And maybe more of a distraction for you than it was for Shakur, because it was a member of your family that was involved in it. It wasn't a member of his family.
Yeah, maybe you're right. You know, because like I said, like I didn't really talk, so I had everything in me, and Shakur was more verbal about it, going out and about it. So he was a little bit more loose, and I was just, like I said, the quiet guy.
But at the time, Shakur was your sister's boyfriend, yeah. Right? And that's what they played up. Mm-hmm. How much did it bother you, you know, that she was brought into the equation, and it made it seem like, you know, that's why you really wanted to take this guy's head off?
It bothered me just because, like, you know, like, why do they had to go that route? Like I said, it wasn't my promotion. I'm with Golden Boy, so he's with Top Rank. So Top Rank promoted that fight, and they took that route, and I really have no say in it. Mm-hmm. I just go in there and play the role and fight. But it is what it is. Like I said, the only people to blame is obviously, to me, is Shakur and his team for allowing that. I believe the fight after me and Shakur, I think Teofimo, I forgot who he fought, but they were playing something about his family as well, pumping up that way. So
yeah,
as you can see, it wasn't from my side.
There really wasn't any family drama going on at the time with you guys. It was just something that it was played up for the fight.
It was played up, but then it got to the drama just because the extent they took it, you know, the things that were being said, you know, like just a lot of things. Like I said, I'm very private. I don't talk about my stuff, you know. I barely talk. And they took it a little too far.
So everything good with your family then?
Everything's good, yeah.
Okay.
We're all good.
You know, I watched a lot of your fights when you were coming up as a prospect and developing into a contender, like 7 or 8, right? Like, you know, your fights at Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, and the Blasco Theater in downtown LA. And what I noticed in that fight that I never noticed before, because you're such a dedicated fighter and you're such a natural fighter, right? You get in there, it's like you're at home, mm-hmm. right? And I know, I think style is part of it, you know. Obviously, the drama and the way it was kind of blown out by ESPN and Top Rank. But you seem tight. Mm-hmm. You seem tight during most of the fight, except for like maybe the 7th round where you kind of just like said, whatever, I'm going to pressure him, mm-hmm. and, you know, and you won that round. But it seemed like part of that equation was just the magnitude, just yeah. the fact that it's your first title fight. Mm-hmm. It seemed like you were kind of tight,
yeah.
and you know, what I want to know from you is kind of going forward. Okay. Your second time fighting for the title, are you going to feel more at home, more relaxed? Cause that's behind you now. You kind of got that out of the way.
Well, honestly, on like the tightness part, I don't think it was like a mental part. I think it more was physically. I think I might have trained over a little bit. Like mm-hmm. I said, my first world title fight, I really wanted to win. I was, you know, running really hard, training really hard, sparring really hard.
Right.
And obviously, I like going into the fight, I'm thinking, you know, I did everything so hard. I pushed myself, forced myself, but it was to an extent. It might have been a little bit too much.
I could see it. Like yeah. I can literally see it in like your back, in your muscles.
Yeah,
like
so
you
then,
were,
yeah.
it's like you were tense.
Yeah. So then,
and I'd like, never seen that no, before.
And recently, just you know, Manny Pacquiao, who just retired, said that for his fight with Ugas, he overtrained.
Yeah.
And
he started
cramping for that
yeah.
fight.
Yeah.
Did you cramp up? Did you feel that?
My shoulders, to be honest, yeah, my shoulders. I even told my brother. A couple of days after the fight, I told him, hey, did I get hit on my arms or did, you know, did he get hit with an elbow or something? He's like, no, why? He's like, I told him, yo, my shoulders felt tight. I felt like I was cramping a little bit. So then, you know, I learned from that fight. Coming to the Mariaga fight, you know, I was training hard. And, you know, we spar a certain way. We wear certain ounces a certain time. And there was a point where I told my dad, you know what? I don't want to wear these ounces today. You know, like, I want to, like, I'm good. Like, let's just train normal. Yeah. Let's just go with the flow. Like,
you
I'm
know your
shape.
Body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did. And then, and as you can see, the performance, you know, it was a good performance and I came out with the victory. So it worked.
Yeah. You were you in the Mariaga fight. But I also kind of noticed a certain maturity in that fight and confidence too, mm-hmm. which I think surprised a lot of people because you were coming off a loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you were in there with, like, it wasn't just a guy. It was mm-hmm. a guy, you know, a former world title challenger, and he was the house fighter and so forth. But you knew what to do at the right times.
Yeah.
You knew when to box. You knew when to back off. You knew when to press. You definitely knew when to go to the body. And looking forward to the Navarrete fight, I do want to know if you feel like that's a key to victory, is going to Navarrete's body.
Honestly, from my point of view, I feel like he gets frustrated with people moving on him.
Mm,
I saw it in the Villa fight. You know, I just think Villa got clipped a little early and his game plan went out the door. And then I saw it in the Christopher Diaz fight. Christopher Diaz was moving a little bit in the first round and keeping his distance. But, you know, the size is obviously played a big part. You know, Lamarete has a longer reach. He's obviously taller and he started catching him. And Christopher Diaz got cut up in a firefight. Yeah. So I feel like, you know,
do you do to avoid that precisely? You know, he's the type of guy that's going to be right in front of you and he's going to lure you in and try to get you to trade with him.
Yeah, I think I'm smarter than both those, his last two opponents, Avila and Christopher Diaz, and I feel like I can box better than them. I feel, you know, this time he's not fighting with the smaller featherweight, he's fighting with the natural featherweight. We're at around the same height, same arm length, and it's going to be a great show.
Yeah, you know, he had the size advantage when Navarrete was fighting at 122.
Yes.
He just dwarfed everybody.
Yeah.
And he's still pretty big as a featherweight. He's tall and definitely rangy. And I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, like, his most notable fights are the two against Isaac Dogbe. Mm-hmm. And he's like 5'1".
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that dude is short.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, he is.
And then Ruben Villa IV is a short guy.
Yeah, he's short.
You know,
too.
And not really a power puncher, you know, although a slick southpaw. And I hadn't thought about it, but Chris Diaz is not like a tall guy.
He's a short guy, you know, a stocky guy.
I thought of him as a big guy because he had come down in weight.
Yeah, from 130. And I don't know how he was fighting at 130, but, you know, he came down in weight.
Maybe he shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
But you mentioned your brother, you mentioned your dad. You guys are a boxing family.
Yeah.
All your brothers fight. Your sister was an amateur standout as well. Is she still fighting?
Currently, no.
No, currently no. But so how does that whole family boxing dynamic help, you know, going into big fights, you know, knowing that your dad knows exactly what to do with you? You've been trained since you were 10 years old. Mm-hmm. Does it help? How does it help? Or because sometimes, you know, the father-son relationship can wear out at some point in the career.
Yeah. No, it helps a lot. You know, I have my brothers pushing me. You know, obviously, they're helping with the sparring. And obviously, my dad's pushing me too. And, you know, my dad's always known me for, you know, working hard. So when I say, you know, let's slow it down or, like, something hurts, I'm sore today, like, he knows I'm not just saying it just to not do the workout or do whatever I have to do. He knows I'm telling the truth.
That's
a good point. And we'll take, you know, the gas off the pedal a little bit. And, you know, we all support one another. You know, my mom, my dad, you know, my brothers are always there for me and making sure, you know, I'm 100% that nothing's, you know, stressing me out. And vice versa, same with me to them when they're getting ready to fight my brothers. And yeah.
How much you mentioned stressing out, and I read that for your first big amateur fight, you guys all got into a van and you drove 26 hours. Your dad barely slept to get you there in time. And you thought to yourself, I'm not just here to fight. I'm here to win because from here on out, you know, I'm the one that's going to, you know, get my family, you know, to do better in life. How much of that is still going on within your head and thinking to yourself, you know, that's why I need to win a title?
No, that's always in my head, you know, because I do a lot of things for my family. Like I'm a family guy. I'm young, but my family's like everything to me. And yeah, like you said, like back in the day, my amateur days, my first amateur tournament, it was 2007 National Silver Gloves. And I was the only one from the gym that made it to the Nationals. And it was in Kansas City. Obviously, back in the day, we didn't have, you know, the money to go everyone on a plane. So we drove. We drove everybody in a van. We drove maybe like 2 days.
Wow.
And obviously in the Nationals, if you lose, you're out.
Right.
So we got there and, you know, the first fight I fought a kid. Actually, my first fight, I believe I fought Albert Bell, if you guys know him from Toledo.
Yeah, he had standout.
Like a, yeah, he's like amateur 130 standout. Now right now. And he had like about 70 fights and I had like 20 something. And I beat him. And I didn't know he had 70 fights till after I won the whole tournament. He came up to me and we started talking. He's like, "Well, how many fights do you have?" I told him like 24, 25 now. And then he's like, "Oh yeah." He's like, "You're serious?
You're pretty good."
Yeah. He's like, "You serious?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "How many fights do you have?" He's like, "Oh, I have like 72." I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Well,
and that was it.
Well, we're gonna take another quick break. We'll be right back with Joel Gonzalez here in the blue corner.
Have you ever met a single person in your life that enjoys paying taxes? No, no one does. If you can't sleep at night because you have a huge problem with the IRS, I've got some free advice for you. This service is strictly limited to individuals that owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes. And if you qualify, we can guarantee that you won't be writing a big fat check to the IRS or our services cost you nothing. The first 100 people that call today will get a free tax consultation worth $500. Stop worrying about your IRS problem. We can help you, we promise. Call the tax doctor right now, I mean right now, to learn more.
800-741-8791. 800-741-8791. 800-741-8791. That's 800-741-8791.
And we're back in the blue corner. Our guest is Joel Gonzalez today, Doug Fisher, Jaime Mota. And if you guys missed any portion of this podcast, you can check us out on iTunes and Spotify, wherever you guys get your podcast. Also, give us a like on social media at inthebluecorner.podcast on Instagram and everywhere else. It's Blue Moon Boxing, Blue Moon Entertainment. Now, we're back here with Joel Gonzalez. And Joel, we were talking about, you know, your fights, your upcoming fight with Emmanuel Navarrete, and the fact that your dad trains you, you know, your boxing family, your brothers are also your sparring partners. How much does this mean for your family going into the second title fight? And what would it mean if you do get that title?
No, it means a lot. It means everything to myself and my family because, you know, it just shows the hard work we've put in since the amateur days, since I started, since I was 10 years old, not just myself, but my parents as well and my brothers. So it means everything. And obviously, you know, winning this world title, it does a lot for me. And it's just a dream come true, a dream accomplishment that I have.
How long has it been? How old are you now?
I'm 27.
27, so 17 years in the making.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah.
A lot of dedication.
A lot of dedication. What would you do? What would be the first thing you would do after you won that title? You know, after you put it around your waist, whatever, and you know, all the accolades start coming, and hopefully bigger checks. What would be the first thing that you do for yourself and your family?
Honestly, just celebrate at home. You know, we don't go crazy. Like I said, we're very private, we're very quiet, and just spend it and celebrate with my loved ones.
What is, for example, I know that you've wanted to buy a big house for your family. Is that something that...
I bought that last year.
Oh, you bought that last year. There you go. All right. There you go. You know, first check. on that list for you. Mm-hmm. Did that also, other than pride and knowing that you're taking care of your family, how much does that take some of that weight off of your shoulders going into a title fight like this against Navarrete?
I don't think a weight. It was just a goal that I had also. It was never pressure. You know, I just wanted to do that just for myself as well. That was one of my goals. And, you know, pandemic happened and I just started looking into, you know, houses, real estate. And I moved on it. I moved on it quick and got the house. And you know, that was it.
The whole family, the whole family's together.
There. Yeah, the whole family's there. Brothers, sisters, parents, everybody's there.
That you know, that's also something, you know, that not a lot of people get to do. And when they do, it's usually, oh, I'll get the house for my parents,
right?
You know, and you guys are somewhere, you know, else somewhere differently. But you know, the fact that you guys remain close, remain together.
Yeah, they share in the success.
Yeah,
they share in the journey.
Yeah,
and I tell you what, I mean, you win, you're going to be recognized as the best featherweight in the world because that's what Navarrete is recognized as. That's what he earned with his activity in his last two performances at featherweight. But it's not just you; like your father will get some shine. Hmm. Like he will get that respect within the professional boxing world.
Yeah, yeah.
Like. Hardcore fans will be like, oh, that guy is a trainer of champions now. Mm-hmm. Even your younger brother, Jose, people will start watching him. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're the younger brother of the featherweight champ.
Yeah.
Maybe you're going to win a world title at, what weight is he? A junior middleweight?
At 135.
Oh, he's 135. He's
lightweight.
He looks huge, though, man.
Yeah, he's tall.
Yeah, lightweight. Whatever weight class he fights at, people are going to be watching him and expecting big things from him because you won a world title.
Yeah, we share the success, you know, like this. It's our journey, you know, we're all in it together. They have backed me up 100%. It's not just me. I owe a lot to my parents and to my brothers for helping me. And, you know, like I said, like first check or when I start making money, people forget. And you, like you said, you know, it might be just my parents, but not for you guys. But no, my family's my family.
They sacrifice too.
Yeah, they absolutely. Sacrifice too. At the end of the day.
As parents and as a trainer.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they're the only ones that are always be there for me 100%. So
true.
So we share the success together.
Also, there's, you know, the whole father-son relationship. Some of the guys that are thriving right now are also very vocal, very social media savvy as well. You know, a Teofimo Lopez, a Ryan Garcia. Have you thought about, you know, you mentioned it, you're a quiet guy. You know, you guys are a private family.
To the extreme.
Have you thought of, like, maybe opening up a little bit more, you know, doing something? I don't know, maybe you want to show people your moves on TikTok. Something, you know, because nowadays the boxing industry has changed because of social media. Have you thought about opening up a little bit more?
I thought about it. I'm still thinking about it, but it's hard, you know? Like, I just don't like people in my business or like asking me all these things. And then once I start doing that, you know, you start getting DMs and people commenting and
it's
stuff
a two-way
like that.
Street,
that's
man.
Right.
That's right. You can't just put stuff out there without stuff coming right back at you.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, I know times
gotta watch
have
out with
changed.
All the girls DMing you.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I gotta watch out for a lot of things. But it's still like, you know, in my head, if I might not do it, you know. But
is
we'll
that
see.
Something that you might need to talk to someone else
about?
You know, maybe your manager, maybe Frank Espinosa,
maybe make a separate you know, Instagram account, and you know, this is my boxing, and you guys handle this, and this is my private life. Maybe I gotta do that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we have something here in the blue corner called our rapid combos. So we're going to throw out, you know, some questions at you so you can come back and, you know, maybe hit us back with a few of your combinations. So, for example, the first one, if you had the chance, would you rather have a championship or a gold medal?
Gold medal.
Ooh, really?
See?
Oh, see that?
Some guys will go for the gold medal.
Why a gold
medal?
He's
talking Olympics.
Because the gold medal, you know, you'll move quicker in the amateur ranks. You know, everybody could be world champion, but...
But not everybody's an Olympian.
So, or a gold medalist in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Gold medal winners are rare.
Yeah, gold medal are rare, and they'll take you further in the pros.
Okay. A title or beating Shakur Stevenson?
A title. Oh. It does more for me, you know, like Shakur's just Shakur. Like everybody thinks, like I said, there's a lot of stuff, but I'm doing my thing. You know, he's doing his thing.
He doesn't define you.
Yeah. And like I proved that in my last fight, you know, I moved forward. I got the victory against a tough fighter, and the title's going to do for me in the longer run.
Muhammad Ali or Mike Tyson?
Mike Tyson. Knockouts are exciting.
Yeah. He's not wrong.
It's true. It's true. Absolutely. What are you watching on TV right now? What's your go-to series?
No series. Just, you know, I'm watching Disney Plus, the new shows like Loki and just like just watching movies on Disney Plus, you know, superhero movies, trying to
Same.
Let the time go by. Yeah.
Well, you got kids. Well, you got kids.
No, but
they make you watch.
No, man, it's me.
Disney Plus.
And I'm watching the cartoons like God from the knows, '90s. You man. Know,
all of a sudden, I come home and you know my 12-year-old will be like, "Hey, Dad, sit down right here. We're watching this." What kind of music do you like to listen to, and is it different from the one that you like for training?
No, I like to listen to, you know, Mexican music, you know, I like Bad Bunny, you know, old school rap. I switch it up. I don't like to listen like to the same thing over and over, 'cause, you know, it gets boring. I like to mix it up. So yeah.
Old school rap.
Hmm. What are you trained to?
Right now I'm listening to a lot of Bad Bunny. A lot of Bad Bunny right now.
Bad Bunny.
Yeah. So then, Mexican music, El Fantasma. So yeah, listen to that right now.
Okay, your guilty pleasure as far as food is concerned when you're not training?
Food or dessert-wise?
Oh, it could be either one. Now we open up another can of worms right there.
Food, I would go with, you know, typical Mexican food, some tacos, some...
Carne asada o el pastor?
Carne asada. Depending on my mood, but lately I've been going towards El Pastor.
I love El Pastor tacos.
And some buche.
Ooh, yeah. Now we're talking.
And then dessert-wise, I like brownies, a lot of brownies. And pan dulce.
Sweet tooth?
Sweet tooth, yeah.
You got any?
I love mythical matchups. If you could fight any featherweight in history, what would be your dream fight?
Oof.
Any featherweight, Salvador Sanchez.
Oh, boy,
that's
tough.
He's going for the very
top. That's right,
top.
That's right, man.
It's another.
Talk about mythical.
Another nice, great Mexican fighter that throws a lot of punches. Yep. You know, like Navarrete throws a lot of punches. Yep. You know, had that bouncy style, his own style, but different.
You're right. And he did have that kind of bouncy, herky jerky thing. Yeah.
You know, you don't see that these days, and you know, it's a great fight. That'll be a great fight.
And he had an amazing afro. You don't have a nickname.
No, I don't.
You're so low-key. You don't even have a nickname. Okay. If you had to get a nickname, what would be your nickname? Can you think of one?
I can't even think of one.
You know what?
I'm just staying their business.
Tell you what. He said he likes El Fantasma as far as music is concerned. You know? Ghosts come out of nowhere.
If he does the stick and move thing and he's hard to reach.
Ghosts come out of nowhere. Yeah. They can be quiet. How about El Fantasma?
Hey, maybe. You know, beating Navarrete, you know, people don't see that coming, so why not?
Yeah. We'll see what happens. Here you go. We just came up with the nickname Joel El Fantasma Gonzalez.
If you get your jab going, we'll call you Jolton.
Jolton
Joette. Is that
Jolton Joette?
Jolton?
Yeah, Jolton Joette.
Jolton's kind of old school. Yeah. That's kind of like old-timey fighters. Jolton Joette, yeah.
Jolton Joette.
El Gato, maybe?
El Gato,
you kind of like the cat?
No.
Or somebody just mentioned, how about Joette Speedy Gonzalez?
I've got that before. Yeah, I got that.
You heard that before? You like that?
That was cool, yeah.
Yeah? Which one of the two would you rather have? Speedy or El Fantasma?
Honestly, I think maybe Speedy.
Maybe speedy. Andale, arriba.
It's a little bit more catchy.
Yeah, I bet you could do a lot of things with that nickname. And lastly, if you could fight anyone today, who would that be?
Anyone today, you know, that's tough.
And it doesn't matter what weight class.
Yeah, probably Canelo. He's a cash cow. You know, another Mexican fighter that pleases the fans. And Maybe, yeah, Canelo. I mean, I don't know who else is at the top of their game like Canelo right now. You know, he's the star of boxing.
I still see him as number one pound for pound. Yeah, yeah, everybody's too. Got Oleksandr Usyk.
I get it. Monday morning quarterbacking, you know, everybody it. Overreacts.
I get it, but I still got Canelo numero uno.
Yeah, Usyk's good, but just Canelo's different.
Yeah. See, for that fight, you would need to be both Speedy and El Fantasma probably at the same time. Yeah. Not saying you wouldn't do well, but, you know, Canelo, he's
on another
level. He's the big tuna right now. Yeah. Well, Joette, thank you so much for being here. You know, we wish you well in your upcoming fight against Emmanuel Navarrete. That's October 15th, right?
Yes, October 15th in San Diego.
So anybody that, you know, can... check it out, and if not, it's going to be on
ESPN Plus.
Check it out as well. Joette Gonzalez, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for being here, bro.
For Doug Fisher, I'm Jaime Mota. We're in the blue corner. See you next week.